COVID-19's Delta variant surge is not letting up in Chatham County. Hospitalizations hit another new high on Tuesday, and accessibility to medical care remains a major concern for residents. One of the healthcare pros on the front lines, Expert Care Urgent Care's Catherine Grant, is today's guest on the Commute Podcast, presented by National Office Systems. Today is Thursday, August the 25th, and you are listening to The Commute, a twice-weekly podcast featuring interviews and insights from Savannah's biggest newsmakers. I am Savannah Morning News opinion editor Adam Van Brimmer. Today's episode features medical pro Catherine Grant, who adds her voice to the chorus of those in the healthcare field talking about COVID-19 and the Delta variant. She'll talk testing, vaccinations, and the other hardships caused by the ongoing surge. Also, later on in this episode, high school sports reporter Dennis Knight joins me to recap the opening week of the prep football season and preview his new weekly high school sports podcast, On the 50 with Dennis Knight. But first, a message about our sponsor, National Office Systems. Comfort at work is important. It impacts our productivity and our well-being. The team at National Office Systems are Savannah's experts in office design and outfitting. They work with top quality suppliers such as Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Furniture. Learn more by visiting www.natoffsys.com. That's NATOFFSYS.com. Now, here's the interview with Catherine Grant. Joined on the Commute Podcast this Thursday by Catherine C. Grant, who is the CEO and founder of Expert Care, which is a number of urgent cares here in the Savannah area. And Expert Care has been on the front line of the COVID pandemic since the dawn of it. And I know I'm familiar with them because last year I had to get tested and the Chatham County Health Department was backed up here in Savannah, but you could schedule an appointment to get tested somewhere else. And that somewhere else in Bryan County was Expert Care. So when we began talking earlier, I said, I know exactly where you are, but they also have some locations. So the one in Richmond Hill is off of 144 down in the Kroger, near the Kroger in Richmond Hill. They also have one on Mall Boulevard here in Savannah and downtown on Abercorn. So I wanted to have Catherine on today to tell us a little bit about what the COVID experience is like, to maybe share some facts with the Pfizer vaccine being fully approved earlier in the week. I know that kind of changes the situation for a lot of folks, but at the same time, our hospitals, I just looked at the data, our hospitals, I think, hit 300 patients yesterday or 300 patients on Monday. So obviously COVID is still wreaking some havoc in our area. But Catherine, what are you all seeing in your locations? And what, if somebody came to you and said, hey, I really don't know what to do in terms of COVID, whether it's testing, whether it's vaccine, whatever it is, what would you tell them?
Right. Well, I think it's a good question. We're all hearing and a lot of different statistics and a lot of things that are being presented as evidence. And so it's hard to know sort of what to believe and how does that apply to me. So we have been, you know, we've been working through this pandemic since March of last year when it got to our area and been involved in everything from testing and through treating patients. And I think the unanimous position of healthcare providers right now in this area is what we're experiencing right now is unlike what we have seen prior. Okay. We are the demand for healthcare and for testing is exceeding the capacity of our healthcare system right now, whether that be, you know, the point of care places such as urgent cares, primary care offices, pediatricians' offices, and ERs, hospital systems. So, you know, there's a lot of different factors that go into that and a lot of different opinions. But I think that the most important thing we can focus on is what can we do right now to mitigate the spread of this illness that's burdening the healthcare system so we can slow it down a bit just to allow the healthcare system to catch up.
Right, right. And I think that it's funny. We were talking about that a lot here was that was the big deal last year, right? Was, yeah, we wanted to mask, we wanted to social distance to protect everybody. And but the whole idea that was absolutely going to stop the spread, that wasn't what it was about. what it was about was slowing down the spread, curbing the spread to keep our hospitals from getting overwhelmed. And right now we're seeing them get to the point where they're close to overwhelmed. From a testing perspective, what are you seeing in terms of the trends? I know you look at the health district site. It seems like the percentage of positive tests is way up. From a testing perspective, what's going on out there?
Right. So we're definitely seeing an exponential increase in the demand for testing. We track our data very carefully internally, and we follow, you know, Department of Public Health and the other factors as well. But internally, we're seeing much of what's being reported externally as well. And that is that, you know, while middle of July to even end of July, we were seeing positivity rates, you know, very low, definitely, you know, below 5% even. So that means that of all the tests we were doing, 5% or less were actually positive for COVID. And for the last 3 weeks, we've seen that over 20%. And so, you know, hovering somewhere between 20, 22%, sometimes even getting as high as 25%. So what that means is of everyone we're testing, you know, almost a quarter of them are coming back as positive. So we know community transmission is very high right now, whether people know they have it or not.
Right. Let's take this opportunity to talk a little bit about the testing. There's a lot of myths or exaggerations about the testing, about how effective they are, how accurate they are. There's two kinds of tests. And I think rapid test, one has a worse reputation, for lack of a better way to put it, than others. What do people need to know about these COVID tests and their accuracy?
Right. Well, it's a great question. It's a big question that I could talk about for a long time, but we'll talk about the highlights, right? Because tests are just tools that help us in making decisions, right? And so there are different types of testing. We've got rapid antigen testing, and rapid can mean a whole lot of different things, but most people think that means they get an answer very quickly. And then there's also PCR testing, which is just a different type of testing that's typically performed in a lab, but there are some point of care, meaning happening in your doctor's offices, PCR testing as well. And so with antigen testing, it's very, very reliable, especially when you already have symptoms. And in PCR testing is very reliable when the specimen is taken properly and you make sure you have a piece of that viral matter. So I think the big takeaway is that, you know, like anything, it's not 100%. Right. It should be taken in context of everything else that's going on. It's one tool that we have that helps us make better decisions. So, for example, right now, if you develop a fever and a cough, right, and you had a negative test initially, that test is just a snapshot in time. Right. And so a lot of times you go, maybe we need another test, or, you know, we really need to get to the bottom of, you know, is this flu or RSV or something else? But we're seeing so much COVID that it definitely, the testing is helping, but we're getting to the point where we're making more and more clinical decisions about, you know, does this seem like COVID or not? It's also helping us identify people who may not have symptoms, but could potentially be spreading the illness, you know, from an asymptomatic standpoint.
Right. And that's what's really come home to me recently. I talked to some folks over the weekend who were vaccine hesitant. They were the unvaccinated. And as we know, this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated now. And the hospital CEO at St. Joseph's Candler said close to 90% of the hospital in his hospitals were unvaccinated. So we know that for a fact. And so these folks I was talking to, they were unvaccinated. And that was bad enough for them to get COVID. But then they said that they gave it to other family members, including other family members who were vaccinated. Mm. And that kind of brought it home to me that, you know, this is not, and I'm making an editorial comment here, you don't have to, is that this is not a matter of personal choice at this point. It's about protecting others as well as yourself. Mm. So that's a really interesting point. I want to ask you one more thing about the testing. Was I took my son to get tested a couple of weeks ago because he was deemed a close contact in school. They're doing the test a little different now. They're not jamming that Schwab up into your brain anymore. What have we learned about the testing and why the change in how it's being conducted?
Right, right. So we've learned a lot about testing. We've done so many tests since the beginning of this thing. And so technology has improved a little bit, but you can do both a nasopharyngeal, which a lot of people call the brain tickle, or the anterior nasal swab. And depending on which tool you're using to process your test is typically going to indicate which type of specimen you need to collect. And so those, they're all of the machines or the technology we're using to run these tests are not created equal. So whatever tool that is really going to drive what type of specimen. But obviously most people are preferring the anterior nasal specimen.
I'd say for sure.
And I think it's a really interesting comment you made. I mean, I think that the conversations people are having about the choices they're making day to day, you know, is more about not just the first order consequences of what happens with my primary contacts, but also playing out, you know, what are the second, third, and fourth order consequences of some of these choices. Right. So it's true. I mean, the numbers are, the numbers don't lie. We hear that all the time. And while the hospitals are full and they are 85-90% of those people with COVID in the hospitals are unvaccinated, which is, you know, it's a reality.
Talked earlier about the vaccine and Pfizer getting full approval. Do you anticipate that maybe changing some attitudes? Do you expect a rise? We're here in, certainly in Bryan County and Chatham County, where you all operate, we're seeing a pretty steady stream of people going ahead and getting vaccinated over the last month. Do you think that accelerates now that the FDA has given full approval?
You know, we were excited to see it. I think it's become such a topic of contention. And so I hope that for those people who were waiting on that, you know, that they get that extra sense of assurance about that clearance. But I also think that I just hope it spurs some more conversations. I hope it spurs more questions. I think that if people have access to the right information, they will make the best decision for themselves. The thing that scares me the most is that the information people are citing is often not reliable. Right. And so I just am hoping and praying that people are able to get access to valid medical information and studies, because these vaccines have been studied more extensively than many of the vaccines we've been using for years. And oftentimes you hear people talk about the timeline, and that's the concern about the vaccines. And so one of the things we look at is the sample size in these studies, the N or the number of people. And so when you look at the sample size of these studies on COVID, it's much larger than most of the drugs and vaccines that have been on the market for many years. So it's been further studied and has a very favorable safety profile when you look at the numbers. But like anything, it's a risk benefit thing, and people need to ask good questions and really seek the evidence.
Right.
True evidence, not opinion.
And that's a lot of people. What you hear from people now is talk to your doctor, your medical professional there, instead of don't take it from me, who has a journalism degree, which is the exact opposite of a medical degree, but go ahead and talk to the people who know and take your advice and get your guidance from them. And I think that's great advice. So one last thing, it's COVID related, and that's how, with COVID dominating, I'm sure it's dominating your business and every other business in your field over the last year plus. How has that changed how you go about doing things? How does that change? Are we seeing people come back in for the things pre-COVID that they were coming in from, or are you seeing hesitancy there? How does that side of your business been impacted by COVID?
It's a great question. It's one of, I think, a lot of medical practitioners' biggest concerns right now with the access to healthcare, because all of the things that we take care of that need urgent or immediate medical attention are still happening. And when we get gridlocked because of COVID clogging up, you know, 75% of the ICU right now, it becomes concerning, because the things like the heart attacks and the strokes and the traumas, there's just not enough bandwidth to get a trained medical personnel in front of them. So, you know, as far as on the urgent care side, I mean, we find that with these volumes, it's really trying to make sure we're getting the people in, not just testing, but the people who really need to be seen. The big lacerations, trying to keep people out of the ER so that the ER can do what they do best, which is emergencies. And so I think that it's with staffing being a challenge across the entire country right now, you know, and healthcare seeing this exponential demand and surge, it's really a complicated place to be. And I think that regardless of everyone's opinion or position on that, I think that that is what healthcare providers are unanimously saying right now, which is we need your help. We need your help to slow this thing down. And it's not, you know, if you don't believe in vaccines or, you know, whatever it is, we should all be talking about what are the small decisions we could be making every day that could have an exponential impact on slowing this down, between, you know, masking, between just being diligent about our contacts, and the little decisions are going to add up. And healthcare providers need help with that right now, because it becomes a scary thing when people don't have access to healthcare when they need it in an emergency.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the ERs, because even for things like I heard anecdotally a broken hand. Somebody had a broken hand and it was on the weekend, so they went to the ER because that's what you do. They get in the ER, and ER is so backed up that a broken hand is such a low priority. They're waiting, you know, half the day, and eventually they just threw their hands up and said, "I'm going to urgent care." So right. I'm sure you guys are seeing the influx of the more minor injuries as well, right?
We are. And, you know, and the concerning thing is now even urgent cares are having to turn people away, which is something that I've never seen in my career. I've never seen urgent cares, you know, get to a capacity point where literally their staff cannot see any more people. And so it also extends to first responders and to EMS. So, you know, if the ER is too busy, you know, EMS can't drop those people off. So if they're waiting at the ER for hours, they cannot turn around and respond to another emergency. So these are the second, third, and fourth order consequences that we're talking about, that if you're not inside the healthcare system, you may not see them, but it's a real reality and something we all need to be paying attention to right now. Because I think, as we said, when we first started talking today, until it hits home, you don't really realize the intricacies and the complexities of some of these challenges.
Right. Well, thank you for everything you do, and keep the faith and keep the fight. And we certainly appreciate you. It's expertcarehealth.com if you want to learn more about ExpertCare and Catherine Grant and what they do down there. And I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks one more time to Catherine Grant for giving us a new viewpoint on COVID-19. We'll bring on sports writer Dennis Knight right after I plug the best source for local news in Savannah. That's right, the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. Want to know why 50-some inmates have been in a Chatham County jail for more than 1,000 days? What's the deal with those speed cameras they have installed on the streets in front of local schools? How about the best and brightest from the high school gridiron? We have all that and more. If you aren't a subscriber, now's the time to try us out. You can get full access to our digital content for $1 a month for the next 6 months. Go to savannahnow.com/subscribe now and sign up. Now, here's Dennis Knight.
I'm going to spend the balance of the commute doing a high school football preview. We're a little bit behind. It started last week, but it gets really going in earnest this week with everybody in action with Savannah Morning News sports reporter Dennis Knight. And I'm having Dennis on today because he is starting a podcast, On the 50 with Dennis Knight podcast that will post every week and give us a little bit of a high school football preview every week, recap, preview, maybe some interviews. We're going to turn Dennis into the multimedia star that he so rightfully should be. So he is going to kick it off here with us on the commute today. And we're going to talk a little bit about week one and then look ahead to this weekend. And Dennis, I know from perusing the scores actually late Friday night that we had a couple of real surprises last week. And probably the biggest was the fact that Bryan County, who hadn't won a football game in what seems like forever, is 1-0. What happened out there in Pembroke?
Yeah, it was pretty neat. They broke a 24-game losing streak. The last time they won was at the beginning of the 2018 season, and it was the first win under Sherrard Freeman, the coach who's been there. I believe this is his second year there, but they played really well. They got a young team, and they were hit hard by the COVID-19.
It's a coronavirus.
Yeah, also some quarantines, but they've still had enough players to get out there and win it. They beat Turner County 38-12, and they had a running back, Austin Clemens, ran for 145 yards and 3 touchdowns. And another running back, Jakari Carney, ran for 100 yards, with Connor Leggett adding 50 yards and a couple touchdown runs.
So they're pounding the ball, ground and pound.
Yes, they like to run it, apparently. And anyway, it was a big win for them, and it was nice. We had Mike Brown out there covering the game, so we had a game story on it, and things are looking up at Bryan County for that football team under Coach Freeman.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about him. Obviously, last year he come in, he didn't win any games, but then again, he's rebuilding from scratch. What do we know about him, and is this the beginning of a trend?
Well, I think he'll be a good coach for them. He's really done a good job recruiting the hallways and getting the numbers up over there and kind of generating interest in the program. They've got a really young team, and what Mike told me, he was really impressed with, where they just had 3 penalties in the game in their opener, which is unheard of for mm-hmm. the openers I've been to, mm-hmm. and no turnovers.
Discipline.
So yeah, he's doing a good job out there.
Yeah, and of course, last year Richmond Hill was one of the surprise teams that made a really deep run into the playoffs. That was last year, or the year before.
That was the year before. Last year,
it all runs together.
Yeah, I got you. Last year, Richmond Hill, they got upset by Glenn Academy and ended up taking second in the region, and they reached the second round of the playoffs. The year before was when they made the run to the Final Four. Okay.
But Bryan County, is football is looking up. Another good thing we want to talk about from last week was we had, I guess on paper, it's an upset, and that's that Calvary beat the defending state champion. But from your perspective, maybe it wasn't much of an upset, right?
Yeah, well, Prince Avenue Christian, they lost their guy.
The quarterback, right?
Yeah, Vandergrift.
Right.
And he's now at Georgia. And his father is a coach at Prince Avenue Christian, who won the state championship with him earning Gatorade Player of the Year honors last year. But they, from what I heard, they only had 3 guys coming back, and one guy on offense was an offensive guard. Mm-hmm. So they were ranked number 3 in the state by the AGC coming in. And Calvary, for some reason, which reached the Final Four, was not ranked in that top 10. I couldn't understand that ranking there, because they have a lot coming back, including Jake Merklinger, their quarterback. He's just a sophomore, and he earned scholarship offers from Michigan State and Cincinnati over the summer.
Okay.
So he had a really big game and threw for 13 out of 24 for 249 yards and a touchdown, and also rushed for 82 yards and a score in that 21-13 win over Prince Avenue.
Yeah, and as good as he was, there was somebody else in that backfield that nobody expected, or maybe nobody outside the team expected.
Yeah,
right?
I think the team might have had a clue of this kid. He's been going to Calvary at the younger grades, the lower grades, until this year. His name's Donovan Johnson. He's a freshman. He goes about 5'11 and 200 pounds, and he's built like a freshman in college.
Right.
He rushed for 87 yards and a touchdown, and also had 3 catches for 38 yards. So this guy's a really great athlete. I hear he's a great track and field athlete too, a sprinter.
So if you got a dominant quarterback, it's a sophomore, you got the up-and-coming tailback who can catch a ball out of the backfield, I think we'd expect a lot of points out of Calvary, not only this year, for the next couple of years, right?
Yeah, and expect very few points given up with this defense they got with Troy Ford, the linebacker. He broke his hand on the first contact practice, but he had an operation on his hand and only missed 2 weeks, made it back for this game. This kid hit the recruiting news big time over the offseason, getting offers from Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Auburn, South Carolina. So he's just a junior. And then Terry Simmons is his classmate, 6'2", 310 pounds, defensive tackle. And he had a huge game against Prince Avenue Christian. And then we got Juwan Johnson in the backfield, also playing some receiver. who has done real well in this first game. He has offers from Gardner Webb and Army right now.
Wanted to look ahead to this week, but before we do that, I wanted to, one thing that I noticed last week and just kind of flipped around, it was one of the games was on television and then I saw it in the newspaper, was the fact that we're seeing a lot more games between GHSA schools and GISA, so the Georgia Independent Schools Association. And then also you're seeing GHSA schools play South Carolina schools. All these are early in the season, so they're all non-region. But what is behind that? I remember a day when that never happened. Why is that happening?
Well, I think in the last 5 years, GISA had finally opened it up to say their teams could play against GHSA schools. And GISA, some of their best teams that were located in the Macon area have made the move over to GHSA in recent years.
Okay.
So there's been rumors that maybe GISA would be absorbed by GHSA in the future, but I've just heard rumors about that. But yeah, it's Memorial Day had originally had scheduled Savannah High early in the season, and then they took that off the table. I think Memorial Day, I don't know if they have very good numbers on their roster right now.
Right. And Country Day played Bullock Academy, which is a pretty big size school.
Bullock Academy, they've got some good players. And last year they beat Savannah Country Day in the first or second week of the season in what was like a big upset. Mm-hmm. But Country Day got a little revenge this week on Bullock Academy as Barry Kleinpeter and Kenny Odom hooked up for the passing catching duo with Kleinpeter at quarterback. He threw a touchdown pass of 50 and 27 yards to Kenny Odom, who's a speedster, also a track and field star for Country Day. So watch out for that duo this year.
The interesting thing with the South Carolina schools, too, because I'm one of these people that, for as close as we are to South Carolina, we might as well be a world away when it comes to high school sports. When you see, and there's some really good teams in the Lowcountry in South Carolina between here and Charleston. When you see matchups, I believe Richmond Hill played somebody from over there last week. When you see those matchups, are they as fascinating to you as they are to me, or am I just a little crazy?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good thing to kind of generate interest in the area, to have teams play in teams that they usually don't see. And, you know, that's close by enough where people can get out there and watch the games. And I think it's a good thing for the sport in the area.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of a better idea of how maybe football stacks up here versus South Carolina, other than the All-Star game that we have every year.
So yeah, true.
It's pretty interesting. So we are going into week two, but it's week one for a lot of teams. I know that for Islands High School, it's week one. And of course, Benedictine, I think they had a game postponed. Am I imagining that? But they get going this week.
They were supposed to open up against Burke County, and County had a COVID outbreak.
That's right.
Burke County was supposed to have BC and Richmond Hill in the first 2 weeks. Anyway, they ended up each having the same opening spots on their schedules, same open dates.
Right.
So BC has moved that game to October 1st.
Okay.
And Burke County, it will be at Burke County, and then the Burke County Richmond Hill game will be September 10th. But
this week, BC has not Burke County.
They have Christopher Columbus from Miami coming to town. They've set up the series. It's a home and away. So next year, BC will be driving down to Miami, and I'm going to demand to have to cover that game.
Yeah,
you know,
I think you should.
Take my first trip to South Beach ever. But I was kidding, Holden Gerner, the quarterback who's committed to Auburn, the senior BC star, the four-star QB, that he should have gotten in there and made sure that they were on the road this year. So he could have visited down there. But this is going to be a good game. Christopher Columbus, I think, is ranked by USA Today in the nation, from what I hear. They have a quarterback who's going to Yale and a running back who's committed to Navy. But BC has a lot of stars on their end, including Gerner, who we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a great receiver in Jaquan Bryan, a junior who's stepping into the shoes of Trent Broadnax, now at Duke. And Jaquan had a great season last year as a sophomore. I think he had 45 catches for over 700 yards. And then Justin Thomas is back. He was our offensive player of the year for the Savannah Morning News last season. He's headed to Georgia as a center fielder. He's a little small for Georgia football, but if they gave him a chance, I'm telling you.
Might get in there and give him some good practice reps anyway, right?
And then we have leading that BC defense will be Holden Sapp, and he's going to make it an Army-Navy thing against this running back because Holden just committed to Army on Sunday night, announced his commitment.
Okay.
So that'll be a good matchup.
So that's 6:30 Friday at Memorial. Of course, yeah, we know that BC
is starting a little early, 6:30 p.m. So
that's going to be a packed house, I can only imagine.
Yeah, and the tickets are only available online, I believe. So check those out online before trying to come out and get into that one.
Right. So I want to wrap up here and talk a little bit more about what you have going on. As I mentioned, we had a call the podcast On the 50 with Dennis Knight, but that's also the name of a weekly video feature that you're doing. Can you kind of explain to us what that is? And you have one out there already. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we did one with Holden Gerner last week over at BC, went out on the field and just talked to him a little bit about the prospects of this season. We talked about his decision to commit early to Auburn and get that recruiting pressure out of the way, and also a bit about this game with Columbus and what he's expecting. But we'll be doing that each week with either a player or a coach. I was going to try to set it up with Coach Freeman of Bryan County this week to talk about that big win for them and get some news about what he's doing with that program down there.
So it's just a short interview, and the video is you usually do it out on a football field?
Yeah, we try to do it on the 50-yard line if possible.
That makes perfect sense. But you can see that at savannahnow.com/sports. And so watch the video and then watch next week for the podcast. I will be happy to sit in and assist as needed, but I look forward to hearing what you put together on your own, Dennis.
Sounds good. Thanks, Adam.
That's a wrap on this episode of The Commute. Thanks one more time to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Please support them as they support this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of The Commute and want to hear more, download archived episodes on your favorite podcast app by searching The Commute with At Savannah Opinion. You can subscribe there as well. The Commute returns next Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend.